Welcome back, everyone, to the Behavior Source podcast. I am Julie.
And I'm Aubrey.
And today we're going to talk about one of our very favorite things, which is pairing.
This would be a good topic to talk about because school's kind of coming up. So, you know, pairing can be used with children and parents or siblings, with clients and BCBAs or RBTs, and also with teachers and students.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
I use it with everyone
all the time. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't realize I'm doing it. I think it's such an easy strategy and it's so important and it's so simple that I think a lot of people just do it. They have that intrinsic, like they just do it. It's just what they do. But it's important for us to recognize that we need to do pairing. It's important for that establishing the relationship part. Aubrey, what do you do? Like, so we're both in schools. We both consult in a school setting. And so
yeah,
with that, you know, we interact with a lot of different people and some of them are not as happy to see us as other people are, you know, so what do you do to pair, you know, with staff or with teachers who are not super jazzed that you're there?
Well, you know, I haven't really come across anyone who's not super jazzed that I'm there, but I have come across, you know, there's certain classrooms that have kind of the tougher students. And so when that happens, I try to bring some kind of, I don't know if you call it a treat, but some kind of good thing with me when I go to those classrooms. So sometimes it's as simple as making matching cards with like the student's favorite activity, just so it gives the teacher something else that they don't have to laminate, but could be a potential reinforcer for the student. And it kind of pairs me with the teacher because I'm bringing something for them that they can use, that it's one less thing that they have to do. So in those situations, I try to ask them, like, if there's one thing I could do this week that would help you, what could it be? And so then I'll try to kind of bring that the next week. But that's kind of how I pair with staff, I guess.
Sometimes I feel like pairing with the staff is sometimes more important than it is, you know, what we're doing with students. I mean, not that what we're doing with students isn't important, but with our role specifically and the way that our positions are structured, just because we're coming in a more like consultative way, we're not working directly one-on-one. And so it's more important for us really to get that buy-in from staff right away so that they listen to what we're saying. So then they want to implement those things with our students. And so I think I do something similar when I go in. Like, I think I probably see more people not happy to see me than you do.
Well, you probably see more because we're just with the autism classroom specifically.
That's true. I'm with an entire district, so I don't just support. The autism program is something, it's a very small percentage of what I support with my position. And so like for me, you know, something we've done to pair and build rapport, you know, with our staff is we have prizes and we have like a behavior newsletter where there's like trivia and stuff. And so if they answer the trivia, then they get prizes, you know, and then we have professional development, we do prizes. And then if someone's collecting data appropriately, you know, I reinforce them with prizes and I just send them in, you know, inter-school mail and stuff. And then one thing we did, which I actually saw like anecdotally, I did not take data on this, but I felt anecdotally, you know, this is like sacrilege to BCBAs to say this right now. But anecdotally, I felt like this was effective. Nobody turned me into the board and say I'm the worst BCBA ever. But
I feel like.
But one thing we did do, and I think I would love to do a study on this, but we started, we had thank you notes. And so at the onset of a consultation, you know, we come in and we do an observation, right? And at the end of that observation, I would write out, you know, here's some great things I saw in your classroom. Thanks so much for letting me come in. And I'd like tape candy to it. And I would just like leave it on the teacher's desk before I leave. And that worked so well. Like the next time I came in, they would be so much happier to see me than they were the last time, you know? And so I really think that pairing that initial, just it's a little note. I'm not even writing anything overly detailed, but it was like, thanks so much for letting me come in your classroom. You know, I really enjoyed watching blah, 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 blah. Here's a chocolate. I know your life's hard because I've lived it before. You know, I get it. So I think that's really helped. Maybe I feel like it's helped. And so I feel better about it.
Well, especially when you're first getting to know the teachers and staff, you know, if it's new staff that's come in, or, you know, it's just, that's a nice thing to do, I think. And it does help pair.
It's just, it makes me feel better. And that's probably going to help with my attitude when I go in and help people.
But I agree with you with that consultative role in the schools. It's a little bit different, and you are pairing more with the adults and staff than you are with the students, or at least that's what I find for myself in when I'm in the schools. Except for maybe sometimes I'll model what pairing looks like. Ooh. And so that's one time, that's like a time that I would be doing that. And that typically happens like at the beginning of the year, because it's such an important thing to start off with. You can almost become a conditioned reinforcer, because you're the one that is, making things more fun. Mm-hmm. So
you're the bringer of good things.
Reinforcer. But when I'm there, I make it more fun. And that's the whole concept behind pairing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I do find myself kind of doing it at the beginning of the year to kind of show, paraprofessionals and teachers how to do it for themselves and what that looks like.
Well, and it's kind of misunderstood sometimes, because I'll do the same thing, you know, and I'll come in and I'll kind of model, but I will do the same thing you do, Aubrey, in that I'll just kind of play for a little bit, and y'all, I'll spend that time pairing with the student, and then people either, you know, they think I'm magic, number one, or they get mad and they're like, well, Julie's just playing with them. Julie's not doing any work. She's just playing, and no wonder mm-hmm. he's not exhibiting this behavior for her. And so it's really important, you know, as people in the field, you know, we're trying to explain, like, hey, pairing is a really important component of, you know, instruction, number one. You can pair with individual students. You can pair with the classroom as a whole. You know, I try to bring it back to teachers where I'm like, kids don't want to learn from people they don't like. And so if they don't like you, they're not going to want to learn from you, you know. And I just think back to, you know, wayward youth Julie, a little goth girl Julie, you know, with my black lipstick and my nail polish, you know. And I use this example a lot when I'm doing trainings, where I'm like, there was like half the teachers were like, Julie's great. Julie's well behaved in my class, because they'd paired with me. You know, they built their relationship with me. They'd made an effort. So I was like, cool, I'll work for you. I'm, you know, I was a bright kid. I would do the work if I liked you. But if I didn't like you and you upset me and you didn't pair with me or build that relationship, then I was like, oh, no, screw you. And then, you know, me and my friends would make your life miserable. And I use an example as like, we need to have that pair, or we need to do that. And that can look different from each age. And at little kids, you know, a lot of times it's play. Mm. And I got to see the most amazing example in the real world the other day. And I'll tell you the story, Aubrey, because I kind of already told you a little bit, but I'll tell everyone in our podcast.
Do.
So my daughter is 5, right? And she has a lot of anxiety about a lot of things, but specifically water. Like, she's never liked to get her head wet in water. We have shaped that to where I can wash her hair now. She doesn't freak out in the bathtub. She's fine. But I didn't really know how she was going to do in a pool, because it's a lot of water. And she can't touch the bottom most of the time. And so we kind of tested it out, and she did not do well in the pool. She like had a little meltdown. She can't get pool water on her. And so we're like, we're going to sign her up for swim lessons this summer. You know, it's going to be okay. We ended up signing her up for individual swim lessons with an individual teacher, because she had such a meltdown in the pool. I didn't want to put her in a class and then her freak out, you know. So I gave her an individual teacher, and I'm just like, I don't know how this is going to go. We're going to see. And the first day, it made my little heart so happy, because the first thing this swim teacher did, and she just pulls my kid, you know, they sit on the side of the pool, and I'm thinking, and they're just, you know, playing and they're talking, and she gets this little rubber ducky and it kind of squirts things out of its booty. And so then she's like, it's peeing on me, you know, and my kid loves to have things like, she likes to talk about booties and pee and poop, because she's kind of like, you know, she likes that kind of stuff for some reason. She's the girliest kid ever, but that's what she likes to talk about. And so she thought that was amazing. And this girl is playing to her interest, and they're just talking. And she did this for probably like 10 minutes. And then she got her to go in the water. She got her to go under the water. She got her to dip her head in the water. She got her to swim. And so now, you know, we're on day 8 of swim lessons now. And so she's, you know, she can jump in the water now, and she'll let go of the edge. And so she's come so far, but every single lesson, they have a little pairing session. And so at the beginning, it was like 10 minutes. And now it's like literally like 20 seconds. They sit on the ledge, they squirt the little duckies at each other, and then they get in the pool, right?
Yeah, because she's built that relationship with her. That's
exactly
great.
And so I'm just like, my kid literally has meltdowns about the pool, you know, and now she's fine. She gets in the pool. She's so happy. And I am sitting here, I'm like, you know, somebody else might look at this and be like, she's just wasting time, you know, mm-hmm. sitting on the side of the pool. I'm paying you good money. You need to get in the pool and teach my kid, you know. But I'm just sitting here like, no, man, this is amazing. It made me so happy. I'm like texting all my BCBA friends. Oh my gosh, you guys won't believe this. My daughter's swimming teacher is doing such a good job, you know, pairing with her. And so that's just, you know, hey, a real world example. It doesn't have to be fancy. It can be super casual. It's just she sat on the ledge of a pool, talked about ducks peeing on each other for 10 minutes. And then she was happy. Life was good.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember it can be really simple, and I want to make sure I go back to that after we're done talking about this. But I also don't want to forget this point of asking you, Julie, like, how do you see that happen differently if she wouldn't have done that little pairing with her and just kind of went straight to the pool?
Oh my God, my kid would have had not a little meltdown. She would have had a big old meltdown because she does have a lot of worries. She gets really anxious and especially about water. And she told me before she went in there, she's like, I'm a little nervous about the water. You know, what if I sink? You know, what if this happens? Who's going to catch me? You know? And so she's very timid at first until you build that relationship with her. And then she's, you know, super silly and like, you know,
yeah,
very outgoing and sassy. But, you know, I don't think if she had not done that, then we would still be kind of holding on to the ledge of the pool. She built that trust with her. And now I think my daughter inherited more of me than I ever like to admit, you know, in that if I don't trust you, I'm not going to do things for you and you're going to have to work on it a little.
Clearly, I've done a lot of pairing with Julie because we're friends and doing this podcast together. No, I'm just kidding.
But I mean, if you think about friendships and things like that, like, but that's a good point. Like, our friendships start because we pair with each other. You know, we put the time in to just, you know, sit and talk about things. And, you know, I think it's an often forgot strategy that is so important to learning, and especially in a school and with school starting, you know, I think it's super important. So thinking about that, Aubrey, you know, school is starting. What are some things that our teacher friends can do to pair with their students?
Well, one of the things that I thought of, and this is really true just across the board, this again, like can happen with like a parent-child interaction or siblings, but one of the things I thought of is really following the child's lead. So when they first kind of, if there is a free play or free choice time or recess, depending on the age of the child or where they are in placement, it might look a little different. But just kind of following their lead to kind of see what they naturally gravitate to and then somehow join in with that. And going back to it being simple, one of the questions sometimes that I get is with learners who might have limited interests. And so it might even look like they just roam around the room. So the teacher's like, well, they just kind of roam around the room, so I don't really know how to follow their lead and play. Or they stem on some beads, so I'm not really sure like how to join in. And so one of the things we talk about with the following their lead is really if they're roaming around, then you're next to them and you're roaming around too. And then commenting kind of on like, you know, if they start looking out the window or just kind of commenting on what they're looking at, and then they start to kind of notice you a little bit more. And then there's some, you know, things you can do. Again, that's just kind of off the top of my head and not a real example, but, and thinking about stemming on beads, I know we had a student that was like that, and a lot of times just imitating and using animation with that. So then you kind of have some beads too, and you're in front of the child and you're kind of copying them. You know, so often we're asking students to, you know, copy us or do things, giving them instructions, especially in the school setting. Mm-hmm. it's kind of fun when they get to kind of be the leader. And I think that's one of the best ways, and it just making it really simple.
I agree. I think it's important. I like what you're saying about taking their ability into consideration and following their lead, and that, you know, what you're going to do for a high school student is not going to be what you're going to do for an elementary student. And what you're going to do for a student who's in a, you know, a severe profound classroom is not what you're going to do necessarily for a student who's in a general education classroom.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter where your student's placement is. It's still something that is important, no matter what their age or ability. And so I think it gets kind of overlooked sometimes. And I don't like that, because it's one of my very favorite things to tell people to do is like, hey, why don't you try to pair with them? And then sometimes I feel like when it gets overlooked, you know, you haven't built that relationship with your student or with the client you're working with, or even with the adult, you know, that you're trying to interact with. You know, if I have a coworker and I haven't built that relationship and I'm like, well, let's get to work, go do this, 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 they're going to be like, screw you, Julie, I'm not doing that. You know, if I try to tell somebody I haven't built a relationship with or paired with, well, here's a data sheet, I'm going to need you to fill out data on this every day, that's not going to go over well. And sometimes I think, you know, and I'm guilty of it too, in that we get into a hurry and we want the learning to happen, or we want the intervention to happen, and we got to get this stuff done, and we skip that part. But that's the fun part. You know, we shouldn't be skipping the fun parts. We should be making the fun part, making sure those fun parts happen. And that's when I see some things kind of fall apart, and not just with our kiddos, but with me too. When I skip those steps and I don't pair because I'm in a hurry and I've got, you know, I've got 8 consults I got to do, you know, this month. And I'm just like, oh, I've got to do all this PD and I'm trying to get it done. You know, then I know I've spread myself too thin. If I don't have time to do a good pair with this teacher, then they're not going to do what I ask them to do. They're even, no matter how well I teach it, no matter how well I model it, you know, no matter how reasonable my data collection plan is, because I feel like my plans are very reasonable. I've worked in a classroom. I know what's up, but they're still not going to do it if they don't believe that what I'm saying is a good idea. And they won't do that if they don't like me.
It helps them see the value and kind of get that initial buy-in faster. And I think about what you were saying earlier about your daughter in the pool, and it's like, it might seem like it's taking a long time, or, you know, like that might have been a higher percentage of her time in class that first time around. But when you put that work up front, it makes such a difference and goes such a long way when you're doing everything else. So while it might seem like, okay, why are we spending all this time playing at the beginning of the school year? Or maybe we're, you know, spending more time in free play or free choice. It's really because you're setting yourself up for success later, and kind of, you know, really you can even get that inventory of reinforcers too, to kind of see what are the things that the child likes.
Yes. It's a great opportunity. Yeah. To do a mini preference assessment while you're pairing. Exactly. You know? And I just think about, you know, everything that's gone on the last year and a half with our kiddos and with our adults, you know, we're all, you know, and now we're kind of cycling back up. And so none of us are in a good place, really. And so that pairing is so key to kind of get that anxiety down, to get that trust built, you know, like it's safe here. You're safe. We're going to have fun. I'm going to make learning fun for you. You know, even when we're talking about pairing with adults, or, you know, when I'm working with staff, it's not, I feel sometimes that I need them to like me to get them to do to trust me to do the things, but it's not about getting them to like me necessarily. It's just about getting them to not dislike me, you know? So just don't dislike, but you know, I am the bringer of good things. Like, I'm here to help you. I want to come in my little, you know, hat and my little wand and be like, I'm here to save you, you know. But that's not how it happens normally. So, you know, you gotta,
there's really no wrong or right answer to this, but when is it a good time to pair with a child or student or client, would you say?
I don't think there's a wrong time necessarily. I think the best time is in the beginning, you know, of a session, or the beginning of a whatever you're trying to get done at the beginning of the day or whatever. Because I think that's going to set your day or your session up for success. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with it. I actually was thinking, you know, traditionally, I think we think about it happening at the beginning. So like at the beginning of the school year, or if it's a new to you student or client, you're going to do a lot of pairing. But really, to me, it's kind of this constant ongoing thing. Yes. Especially when you're working one-on-one with a student, you have a lot of time and flexibility to, to have that one-on-one time and to really have those meaningful interactions.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing, I agree with you on that, that it gets forgotten, where it's like, okay, we're going to pair at the beginning of the year, we're going to pair at the beginning of the session, boom, now we're done. We don't need to pair anymore. And that's not true at all. Like, not, you won't have to pair as long, you know, every time, mm-hmm. but you should absolutely still be trying to pair with your students, with your clients for, you know, months, years, every time. Like, hey, I'm so glad. It can just be as simple as I'm so glad to see you. Yay. How was your day? Oh, that's so wonderful. You know, looking happy to see them can be your pair, you know, like a year mm-hmm. into it. I think that gets forgotten a lot, is that, well, I did it and now I'm done, right? No, it's ongoing.
Yeah. I mean, especially like I'm thinking about some experience, well, we both had with early intervention and working one-on-one and doing more of that discrete trial training stuff. And then, you know, you're providing this reinforcer and, you know, sometimes, it can be easy to kind of just like, okay, now I can write down all the data while they're using this reinforcer. But really, it's important to take the time to make that reinforcer more fun with you. So if you're doing bubbles, like having that animation, or, you know, something as simple as, I want to call it a sound tube, but I don't know if everyone's going to know what that means.
I know what you mean when you say sound
plastic
tube.
Plastic thing.
I hate that thing, but I would look like I loved that thing because
exactly,
I hated
me
it.
Too. And so just kind of making silly noises through it, you know, like just big interactions. It really is something that is important to have throughout that time. Because really, I mean, especially when you think about autism and social engagement, like if that's a core deficit, that's really what we need to work on. And so when we are pairing and we are making things more fun with us, then you kind of get more of that joint attention or that shared attention with objects instead of, okay, I'm just into this object by itself, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the big parts of our science is, you know, moving towards those natural reinforcers, which would be, you know, more social interaction as opposed to here's bubbles. You know, you can't get bubbles in the real world. You know, you ordered a hamburger, here's, no one's going to give you bubbles for that, but they might smile at you and say, tell you to have a good day. You know, you get your hamburger.
Exactly.
Like, hey, I ordered a hamburger. Good job. Thank you so much for shop, you know, coming to McDonald's, have a good day, you know? And so I like that. That example where you're right, that's what we would do. And we would have multiple sessions in a day too. So we'd have them kind of broken up. And so it was really important that we paired each session with our kiddo. Sometimes we'd switch kiddos around. So you got to pair with your new kiddo every single session. And then also making sure that we're, you know, we're trying to get that social engagement so we can transition from, you know, here's a bubble, here's a Skittle, here's an iPad to, hey, I smiled at you. Yay. We're having a little happy, fun interaction. Yay. And hopefully then our kiddos can be, you know, successful in, you know, independent in the real world and in general education and all the real world settings, which is our goal, you know. I just want them to be happy and independent in the real world.
Me too.
So to kind of wrap things up, pairing is super important. Don't forget it. Big deal. School year is starting. Program pairing activities into your day. If you're a teacher, think about games you can play, you know, when the school year starts. How can we just have some fun games, get to know you games and things like that. Show your students that you're fun and you are the bringer of good things. I love that meme. Have you seen it, Aubrey, where it's like Oprah and she's like, first day of ABA therapy, you get an iPad and you get Cheez-Its and you get Skittles and you get this. And maybe if I find it, I'll put it on Instagram. But it is like the funniest meme. And it's so true. Because that's what it is. Like the first the first day, first session, you know, you are the bringer of good things. And so don't forget that it's so applicable in any setting with any person in the entire world. So make sure you're using it. It's super important.
Yeah.
And don't forget to follow us on social media. We are The Behavior Source on Instagram, and on Twitter we are Behavior Source, because Twitter hates us because our name was too long. So Instagram is The Behavior Source and Twitter is Behavior Source. And as the school year amps back up, we will hopefully have more fun things for you guys to listen to and learn about.
Yeah. Well, until next time, be well and be the change.
Bye, guys.